There should be just a little title card before the movie starts. It's like, for our audience out there who are used to certain expectations within these period accurate films, there will be the glimpse of a buttocks from now and again. So please prepare yourselves for the human form.
And it is, that announcement would for sure be in an American doing a British accent.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it wouldn't be a British person. It wouldn't be an American person. It would be an American doing a British accent.
Well, it would be me. I would walk out there.
You're like, obviously it's me in all the theaters.
And they'll be like,
not recording in person.
Just in there. It's like, now if you'll please excuse me, I must quickly run to theater number 5. Like, run over there and do it in the next room. Well, hello, listeners, and hello, Lillian, and hello, special few people who get to actually see our faces. Hi.
Oh, my God. Hi, guys. Don't our faces look good, particularly Piper's, because she just came from a fancy event.
I was going to say, I had an event for work tonight, so that's why I look nice. Yeah. But for you guys, I would have gotten dressed up anyway, maybe.
Yeah. We'll find out when we do this again.
Time will tell, because maybe there'll be a time when we're about to hop on a call and Lillian's like, this one's for the patrons, look nice. And I'm like, oh crap, I am a monster today. So today,
I trust them, they're our closest friends.
Exactly, that's the privilege, is you get to see the real us.
But yeah, it's also fun fact, because we had sort of a weird schedule, each of us this week, a Airbuds Nights episode, because we're recording at really dangerously close to Lillian's bedtime, because she's an old lady and she goes to bed early.
You know what, Lillian? That's okay. And maybe I can actually do this without it breaking. Usually they break 10,000 times. Fill the air as I desperately try to light a match.
Oh, okay. Well, speaking of Patreon, Piper, we have two people we need to thank this week for joining our Patreon. And being our arguably favorite people?
Yeah.
So who are those people, Piper?
Well, I first want to say thank you so much, Sienna. Thank you for being one of our first patrons. So Sienna is one of them. Hi.
And the other one is Sally. And those of you who know this podcast as well as Sienna and Sally might know why I got to read the name Sally. Piper read the name Sienna.
Because we want to make sure, you guys are so special to us. You deserve to have your name said correctly. So, Sienna, if I did say your name wrong, you know where to find me. Kmart parking lot.
You email us, you send us a thing, Kmart parking lot for sure. If you email us and say we said your name wrong, we will thank you again.
It's true.
Because we are grateful every day.
I also want future patrons, like, if your name is Bob, you should be like, by the way, my name is pronounced, and then spell something completely wrong, just to like mess with us, because I think, you know, that's a fun thing we can start here. Yeah,
that works. I would so do that. Yeah. You can also specifically request that you want me to do an attempt. So you can be like, Lillian, can you please try?
Amazing.
And I'll do it because I love it.
So Sienna, Sally, you two are amazing. Thank you guys so much. If you want to be as special and as publicly loved and adored as these two wonderful people are on our podcast, then all you have to do is give us $3 a month. And not only will we talk about you and praise you and be like, you are so smart and funny and talented and kind and beautiful, but also we're going to send you some free awesome content to go with it that only you get to see.
We do have one more special announcement, but that's going to wait till the very end. We're going to talk about one special thing that I forgot to mention to Piper before we started recording, so she doesn't actually know what I'm referencing right now.
Wow.
But she does know the thing.
Okay.
She does know the thing. So surprise for the end for everyone, including Piper.
Awesome. But yeah, if you are just here being a bum and listening for free, we love you too. But guess what?
We're
talking about Emma today from 2020.
Which, whoa, did you guys want us to watch this? So much. We had a palate cleanser survey for my birthday. I picked all of them. The Emma blew it out of the water. Last time we did the palate cleanser survey, it was super close, like almost tied. This week it was like, so I guess we're going to watch Emma. Like 3 seconds into it being out there, everyone came out and was like, you have to watch Emma.
Cool. And we did.
Which we enjoyed.
Yeah.
And we did it.
We didn't say, nah. You're not taking your advice, guys. We're going to do what you want. So we watched it. We watched Emma 2020. It was actually my second time seeing it because I saw this in theaters. It was like a pandemic time movie. And I think this was before theaters had like closed down officially. So I was desperate to go out and like see something. So I saw this in a theater where I feel like it was me and one other person. And the first time it didn't strike me a whole lot. I didn't walk away with big opinions. This time I liked it much more the second time. But we're going to get into all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. We do have to tell people what it's about because people often come to us and they're like, what is this film even? I would like someone to badly recap it in less than a minute or 5 minutes, depending on how they're feeling that day.
All right. I'm just pulling up my handy dandy stopwatch, which now people who are a part of Patreon, they get to see that what the stopwatch actually looks like.
Because we're not going to edit the video because that takes a very long time. Yeah. So usually Piper cuts the vamping.
So anyway, whenever you're ready, Lillian, to tell us what Emma is all about, I'm ready to time you.
So in this Jane Austen classic, a young woman who is beautiful and has never faced any hardships in her entire life, think the opposite of Jane Eyre, is out there and she has created a love match. She has played matchmaker and it worked out really well. And her governess is marrying a man that they're going to be really, really happy together. And she goes, you know what? I'm kind of bored because my life is so good. So I'm going to start meddling in everyone's life around me. She makes a friend. She takes love away from that friend. She tries to force that friend to marry a man who falls in love with her and kind of sucks. She all this time has a very interesting friendship that's pretty steamy with her neighbor. And over time, she learns the valuable life lesson of maybe you're not God and shouldn't act like it. After learning this lesson, she goes around and does her best to make up for all of her misdeeds. And at the end, because it is a romance, everyone finds their love match. Or if you kind of suck, you find another person who kind of sucks and you guys spend eternity together kind of sucking. And that's
wonderful. That was only a minute and 12 seconds.
I was so proud of myself. I kept wanting to go down little tangents and I was like, no, Lillian, not this time.
I'm proud of you too, because I feel like Emma is kind of a hard story to summarize because it's one of those stories where it's not so much about just like, here's the conflict and here's how it's resolved. It's about like, so there's this one conversation that leads to this conversation and a misunderstanding. And then this happens. And it's one of those kind of like, everyone's involved in everyone's business because it's a small village and drama is everywhere. So good job summarizing that.
It has a very similar energy to like Much Ado About Nothing, where it's like, everybody's just kind of out here making a little bit of a mess of the situation. But at the end, everyone's happy and it's fine. And you sort of know that the whole time. It is a very lovely sort of heartwarming show and so funny.
Yeah.
Like Jane Austen is so funny and it is not often captured in adaptions. And I'm very proud of them for doing it, Emma.
Absolutely. The only other version of this that comes to my mind from like our kind of generation is that Gwyneth Paltrow movie, which I never saw. Was that just straight up Emma or is that like a...
That's Emma. Okay, so... That's straight up Emma.
Okay, gotcha.
And it was... I want to say that was from the 90s. I have seen that. I think I've seen that like twice. I was familiar with that before this one came out and I was worried that I wasn't going to like this one because of that one.
Right.
But I actually really enjoyed it the first time I watched it. But I didn't go to a theater. I watched it in my very own house.
There you go. Now, isn't like 10 Things I Hate About You, isn't that...
No, Which one is Taming of the Shrew, which is a Shakespeare.
Right.
But Clueless is probably what you're thinking of.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Clueless is my favorite Emma adaption. It is so good.
I was going to say, because I knew there was like a 90s thing that was secretly Emma. So that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so... Clueless is... we should watch Clueless.
We should watch Clueless.
Clueless is so good. It's so good, you guys. Clueless is the kind of movie that I was legitimately at a friend's house. I super cool was in a shuffleboard league for a while and my friends and I would still get together in the off season. And we just were casually talking about Clueless and we all got so excited that we just watched Clueless.
Cute. Yay. It is very good. Having now the exact plot of Emma more clearly in my mind, it is very interesting to look back at Clueless and be like, oh, wow, it's really interesting how they adapted that to a modern setting. Yeah.
Yeah. We should watch Clue. Guys, we're going to watch Clueless.
So anyway, that's coming up soon. All of my opening notes are about the actors in this movie. So if it's okay with you, I kind of want to start with some of these things. Because
yeah, for sure. I think my only opening note, which I'll say before you talk about the actors, is just in watching this, I couldn't stop thinking to myself, this movie is what the New Persuasion thought it was trying to be.
Yeah. Okay. Which I never watched New Persuasion because I heard it was awful.
I didn't either because it was bad.
Oh, you just so without watching that film, you just assume this is.
No, I watched like people's critiques of it because I was like, that, come on, I'll like that. And people were like, no, here's why it was bad.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, it was very interesting now because when I first saw it, we hadn't started this podcast. So I don't think I had sort of the mindset that I do currently when I look at a period drama slash like period romance. Mm-hmm. And so it really stood out to me just how like visually beautiful it was. The music instantly caught my attention. Like
music was so good.
It was everything. And the costumes. So we're going to go into so many details about this stuff. But my first notes about actors. So obviously Anya Taylor-Joy, everyone knows her. Queen's Gambit is one of her biggest things. She's in everything else. Huge, enormous eyes, just gorgeous lady. So well cast for Emma. One of my favorite British actors of all time, Bill Nighy, is her father. And I thought he was like one of the best parts of this movie. Just him being sort of like a hypochondriac and all these other silly little things.
So incredible. He did such a fantastic job in that role. Mm-hmm. Because he did such a good job of like not taking over the scene, but also like bringing the exact energy that you want. And I'm also obsessed with him. He is not, for those of you wondering, he is not Bill Nye the Science Guy. It's a different fella.
Yeah. This guy, for romance lovers out there, he was the father in About Time.
Which is probably my favorite movie ever.
It's so dang good. But then also for you half Squidman lovers out there, he also played Davy Jones in Pirates of the Caribbean. So whether you like romance or half squid monsters, then, you know, there's something for everybody.
Which I think if we're looking at like the circle of people who like when you say what are some things that you enjoy, they say romance versus half squid man lovers. The list is about equal length.
Yeah, I think so. Romance actually might have to catch up a little.
he's truly in everything, like truly in everything. Because another one I jotted down, he was in Love Actually, a classic.
Which
and he's also in a movie I really love that I haven't seen in that like I don't know that a lot of people have seen, which is Wild Target.
I love Wild Target too. Have we watched that together?
Plays an assassin. No, but we should.
We really should. Oh my gosh, it's such a quirky kind of dark romance. It's so good.
Oh my god. Add that to your birthday palette cleanser list.
I might.
I would love to watch that for this show.
I've been really thinking over what's going to go on my birthday playlist. But
I'm so excited.
On air, happy birthday to Lillian. This is for her.
Oh, thank
yes, because we're doing this for her birthday.
Yay.
I actually saw recently one of those videos where Bill Nighy kind of like talks through his sort of career of films. And when he talked about Love Actually, he said that movie kind of like launched him into like well-known stardom. But then also he said when talking about this movie that apparently before the script for Emma came around, he said before he didn't really want to do period drama films. That was not like a genre that he was interested in. But then this particular production appealed to him. So he's like, sure, I'll actually do it for this movie. So that says a lot about what Bill Nighy thought about the film.
Yeah. Which famously his Love Actually line, which is one of my favorite lines of anything ever, is kids don't do drugs, become a rock star and they'll give you them for free.
Yeah, it's so good. And then the other one that I had written down here is, where is her name? Mia Goth. She played Harriet. And I was surprised to see her in this because she's typically a horror movie and thriller movie actress. She does a lot of really creepy stuff. And so to see her in this very tame, like sweet movie, that was very surprising, but I thought she did it well.
Which was this was very early in her, because she's done a bunch recently, but I guess this was only 3 years ago. This was one of her first, wasn't it?
I don't think it was one of her first. This actress, she's like in her late 20s. She looks like a baby. And I think they've used that in a lot of her spooky movies where she's supposed to play like a 14-year-old girl and she's 28 in reality. So
Oh, yeah. She's been in a million things forever. But anybody who knows me even a little bit at all knows why I didn't know her from the Scary Things and only knew her from this. I don't watch Scary Things. They make me scared and sad.
So don't worry about it. The other last person, I didn't write down the actress's name, but so her governess, who is getting married at the beginning of the movie, that actress, I know her most recently from, she's in Gentleman Jack, which I'm going to keep mentioning until Lillian watches it. And then she also, in a very different role from this, played the sister of one of the houses in Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. And was in the most uncomfortable scene in that entire show.
Yeah. Well, there's a contest for most uncomfortable scene.
There's a bar there, but it was, we're not going to go into it because that's a little bit.
It's a lot, but.
R-rated
if you've,
for this
if
podcast.
If you've seen Game of Thrones, you know what we're talking about. So anyway.
It's not, yeah. It's hard to look at her and not think of that scene, which is brutal.
I know. But let's maybe use that as our kind of gateway to start talking about plot stuff. Because, yeah, we open with, it's, I believe, either the day before or the day of her governess's wedding. So she's moving out of the house. She's getting ready to marry this guy who, like, at first when I, like, saw him, I was like, oh, yeah, like, kind of an older fella, but he's kind of cute with his silver hair, whatever. And then later they're at that big old house. So somehow governess managed to, like, hook herself a millionaire because he's got a swanky place. Yeah.
Well, and I think that he was like, he was sad and lonely and a widower because that's his son is a big part of the plot later. Mm-hmm. And so that's how Emma set them up was like, she's sweet and he's like rich and fancy. And like, I think that's part of, it's an interesting context to bring into the rest of the movie because it's one of those things where you're like, oh, these two people who didn't seem like they would be able to get together got together because Emma meddled and it made both of them much happier because he gets to have this lovely woman in his life and a whole new kind of lease on life, has a new baby and all this good stuff.
Yeah.
And she gets a big step up in society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a win-win
like
for those
other
two.
Governesses we know.
I know. I was going to say, speaking of governesses who want to marry wealthy lords.
And speaking of things that I reacted to way bigger because of this show than any average duck would possibly react, when they said Jane Fairfax, I was like, what?
I know, same. I was like, hang on, wait a second.
Do we know this person?
I thought the exact same thing. The other thing that I love so much about this whole thing is that her father is just like so upset. And I think it's partially because he keeps saying like, poor what's her name on her wedding day. And I think for him, his character is one of my like favorites in the whole movie. And I think he's really interesting. And I don't think he actually believes that her getting married is like going to be a bad situation for her. But I think because she did live in his house and he is like so worried of like people like leaving him because his wife died. Mm-hmm. So his first daughter is already married and gone. And that like broke his heart too. And now the governess who knows what their relationship was, but she's gone. And so he's like sad about that. And he has many scenes when he's with Emma and he's like, you can never ever leave me. Mm-hmm. I can't have people go out of my life anymore. It makes me too sad. I'm super sick and afraid of dying. So like, please stay forever.
Yeah. He's so sweet. We talk like, I just can't get over it. And his constant, like, him sitting at breakfast that morning after the wedding, and he says he feels a draft, and everyone else says, no, there's no draft. And then he goes, she would have felt the draft.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you miss your friend.
I know. It's very sweet. He's a really cute guy. So then, Lillian, take us, what's the next major thing that happens in this story?
Oh, good God. I did a terrible job of taking notes for this. I don't know that this is the next thing. No, this does happen the night after the wedding. There's a butt. There's a whole butt.
We see two butts. There's
two butts in this. There's a whole butt. There's two butts right away. There's a whole butt so fast. He's just nude. Full nudity.
From the behind. We don't get the front.
But like they allude to a front being there.
They really do. No, it's very funny. Yeah. But like, cause not long after we see what will become her eventual love interest and forever love. Mr. Knightley, before we see his butt, then we almost instantly see Emma's butt, like she's just waiting for the maid to leave. And she like hikes up her skirt so she can warm her tush by the fire. So it's like,
and
all
I'm
right.
just like, tell me what the point of the butts was. Did you, listen, I was about to make a joke that would make Layla uncomfortable. We just did our fashion episode and I was like, listen, we learned a lot about underwear. Mm-hmm. Were they trying to appease people like Layla and be like, look, the underwear's right.
You know what? I think honestly, if I were to try to attribute like a critical reason for this, because like at least with Emma's scene and her like flesh and her tush, I think it's mostly supposed to be like, because everything in her life is this whole illusion of perfection, right? Of mm-hmm. oh, look how perfectly coiffed her hair is and she knows exactly what to say and everything. But as soon as that maid leaves the room, she's like, I'm freaking cold, and like hikes up the skirt and warms the tushy. So it's like, you know, she's a human being, and I think that's kind of part of that.
I also think that part of the reason why it scandalized me so much is like, nudity in most things doesn't scandalize me, but it felt scandalizing because this is a period drama, mm-hmm. and I'm used to being like the caress of a hand, like, right? And so it's like, I was like, are you trying to tell me this isn't your mother's period drama? Because it's too much. That's too much for me.
There should be just a little title card before the movie starts. It's like, for our audience out there who are used to certain expectations within these period accurate films, there will be the glimpse of a buttocks from now and again. So please prepare yourselves for the human form.
And it is that announcement would for sure be in an American doing a British accent.
Oh yeah,
like it wouldn't be a British person, it wouldn't be an American person, it would be an American doing a British accent.
Well, it would be me. I would walk out there.
You're like, obviously it's me in all the theaters,
and they'll be like,
not recording in person.
Just in there. It's like, now if you'll please excuse me, I must quickly run to theater number 5. Like, run over there and do it in the next room.
And you have this, you've accidentally forgot to switch your headset, so you do it in like the wrong theater. So somebody watching like Batman or something just gets Piper being like, there's gonna be a butt.
Watch out for the tushies. And everyone leaves the Batman movie and they're like, where were the butts? I didn't see any butts.
Why would they have the announcement if there's not a butt?
This is wonderful. This is the next when our podcast fails and we lose our jobs, we have this backup of just like telling people if they have to see butts.
Unsolicited butt warnings before movies.
Oh my god.
Guys, we did warn you this was Air Bud's night.
Yes, this is what happens. We've worked all day, we're tired.
We start dabbling in R-rated content about butts.
Okay, so anyway, let's talk about Harriet. So one thing I think that I totally...
Ooh, before we talk about Harriet, can we talk about Mrs. Bates?
Yeah.
Or Miss Bates?
Yes. Is that the tall, annoying lady? Yeah.
Yes.
Who's also very
sweet. Here's the like third note I made on this entire movie. When I watched the 90s, Emma, and I was in deep in a Austin phase. So I was always looking for like, who would I be? Piper knows this about me. Anyone who's known me for more than 20 minutes knows this about me. I'm a meddler. So I was watching that, like high school me was watching that. And she was like, I'm worried I could be an Emma. As an adult, that was a misplaced fear. I was never going to be an Emma. Emma's perfect. And that's why she thinks she can meddle in everyone's lives. I'm Miss Bates, for sure. For sure, I'm the woman walking around being like, guys, I've got news. And you're like, it's going to be 20 minutes of nothing, Lillian, again.
But unlike her, we would never be so mean as to call you out at a picnic and ruin a perfectly good afternoon. Because that was mean. And what a hard scene to watch.
So brutal. And I think that that's like part of the beauty of Jane Austen in general and all, I think they call them like parlor room dramas or whatever, where it's just those subtleties of social interactions that are so easy to dismiss as unimportant are the heart of our lives.
Yeah.
And so that comment is reflecting a lot of layers of complexity, which we'll talk about that comment more when we get further into this. But
for sure. Yeah.
I do think I would awkwardly run into a store and be like, I saw you through the window. And you. Woo! Ribbons!
She's just a lady who's excited to have friends and stuff. And I think that's what breaks my heart the most is that it feels very much like a one-sided friendship. It's a woman who thinks that she's best friends with this girl / her niece is best friends with this girl. And But the girl is just like, God, I hate this person. Why are they hanging around? And I think what's so relatable about Mrs. Bates' character is there isn't a human being on this earth, unless you are 1000% egotistical, who does not worry that you are Mrs. Bates secretly. When you go away from, at least for me, like, you know, I could have the best time ever at a party, but then the party's over and I'll wonder and I'll be like, wait, was I actually too loud? Was I annoying? Does everyone actually hate me and they just tolerated me? Like, these are stupid thoughts, but like, I feel like everyone has them. And so, yeah, it's a great way to show us again, like what we talked about. I just re-listened to Why Jane Eyre. And so like characters who are real to us and we know them and we relate with them, that's here too. So it's wonderful.
That's so, yeah, I think she's a great character. And Harriet is sort of like a similarly odd duck. Mm-hmm. And the way that Emma sort of adopts her in and then takes over way too much control of her life is very sweet.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Harriet a little
bit. Let's talk about Harriet. So her situation is bizarre to me, just because, and maybe this was something that was more common back then, but it just seemed so odd because she's essentially, she's not an orphan. She has a father, but he's anonymous. Like, she doesn't know who her dad is.
I kind of get the impression that she's a bastard and they don't want to say that.
Okay.
So that's kind of the vibe I get from this is like, she has an allowance and she's been sent to this school, this fancy school for girls, like a finishing school kind of situation, but nobody knows who her father is.
Yeah.
So she's in this precarious position of her father could be anyone. Mm-hmm. Like, he could be someone really fancy. Mm-hmm. He's certainly someone in a position of power because that's how you have money to do that for your bastard daughter. But
at least enough.
That's kind of the vibe I get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's so interesting because I feel like one of the, so first we hear Emma talking about this girl, Harriet, and it's almost as if she's like selected her, because I think at first I was like very suspicious of whether or not Emma actually cares at all for Harriet. And I wonder if you could argue maybe at the beginning she doesn't really, but then by the end her affections 100% have grown and they're genuine friends. But in the beginning, I feel like she almost picks her out because she sees like a project in her and she says, here is a pretty girl who already has like the fundamental look wise. And I think but she's very impressionable. And I think I can mold her into like my perfect best friend, essentially, which also says to me, because we begin with Emma's, what's the word I'm looking for? Jane is one governess. When we begin with Emma's governess leaving, you then kind of realize, and the way that she instantly then like finds and molds a friend, I don't think she really had friends when like she had her governess and that was kind of it. And so now she's like, well, I can't be alone. So I need a companion. So I choose Harriet. I can make Harriet be my perfect companion.
Well, and I sort of get the vibe from Emma that she has this reputation in town for being like perfect, but she also has a reputation for being smart and kind. Mm-hmm. And I think those are earned. Like we see that a lot in different places, especially when we talk about Knightley and how she is when she talks to him. Like, I think those are very earned things about her. I think she does genuinely care about people, but what I see that you were picking up on with like, does she really care about Harriet at the beginning is, I think she does care about Harriet, but she doesn't actually care to get to know Harriet. She thinks she knows what's best for everyone. Mm-hmm. So she goes, I totally agree. I think she's lonely and I think she's looking for a project and a friend, but I think that she prioritizes the project and I think she thinks she knows what she's doing and she knows what's best for everyone. And so she's going to do this great kindness of being friends with someone who is so much beneath her as this almost charitable thing and has this arrogance from this recent success to believe that she can mold the world into being what she thinks it should be. And out of almost ignorance rather than malice is forcing people into a mold that doesn't fit for them and is actively denying a reality because she hasn't had to face many realities.
True. I definitely think ignorance is a big part of it, but I personally do read, I don't know, there's just something like so just subtly beneath the surface mean about the way that she acts in the beginning of the film that I kind of do personally read it as like she's telling herself, she's like, oh, I'm being so good and being so nice and this is great. But I don't know if she actually genuinely cares in the very beginning. But that's just kind of how I read
into
it.
Yeah. And I see that too. I think it might be the way that you and I are referring to cares. Mm-hmm. I think she wants these people to be happy, mm-hmm. but I don't think that I think she's so arrogant mm-hmm. and so self-centered that she thinks what she has this idea of what would make them happy and what would make everyone happy and what the world would be. Mm-hmm. And it is somewhat centered around her and what she wants and her beliefs.
Yeah.
And so she's going to make that vision happen regardless of what those people actually think and feel.
Yeah.
She's not bothering to get to know what they want and what they need.
Because there's a line that she says in that one of that first scenes when she and Harriet are spending time together and Harriet doesn't know. She's like, should I eat this macaroon? Like, how is Emma eating her food? Is it okay? Mm-hmm. And everything. And they're getting to know each other in that scene. And she's talking about how she spent some time with this farm family. And that's, I think, the family mm-hmm. where the boy is from that she has a crush on, mm-hmm. that Emma later dissuades her from accepting his proposal. But so when she's talking about that family, because she's like, oh, they were so nice and I don't have anything mm-hmm. and they were being really kind to me. And here's Emma who's brought this girl in. And she's like, I think in her mind being like, no, I'm the one who's being nice to you. And she has that line where she talks about this farm family saying, she's like, well, if they were truly impoverished, then I would know what to do with them. Like what does someone yeah. do with someone who's like those people? And that to me,
she says they're
mm-hmm. yeah I don't know, it's just like, and I again, it's totally from a place of ignorance. She doesn't mm-hmm. hasn't been exposed to other things to like know better than that, but it is a very dismissive like comment about other kind people
for sure. Yeah. And I think she specifically talks about like they're both too high and too low mm-hmm. to deserve my notice, because Emma is incredibly savvy when it comes to social rules mm-hmm. So she understands the social rules really well. She doesn't understand the reality of other people's lives. So what she is seeing as a kindness is opening doors for Harriet into spaces that she normally wouldn't be able to get into. Mm-hmm. So that she wants credit for Harriet's happiness.
Yeah.
So she won't get that credit if Harriet marries someone who is at her same level or even slightly beneath her. She wants to recreate the governess and the rich man down the road.
Yeah. No, that's totally true.
So that's what her project is.
Yeah.
So I think you're not wrong that that's like a wildly self-centered thing to say. Mm-hmm. And I think we see that when Knightley comes up to her after Emma essentially convinces Harriet to say no to this young gentleman mm-hmm. He's a tenant farmer and has a good farm and like makes good money and could offer a good life. Mm-hmm. And Knightley comes up and he goes, you talked her out of that? You were so dumb. Do you understand? Like, and his whole thing about like, do you understand that like she has no security? She has no, like, you have all of these privileges. It's somebody who doesn't know the privilege that they have.
Yeah.
He's like, you have all of these privileges. You have all of this security and you have money and respect and a whole safety net that this young woman does not have. Mm-hmm. And these two people were adorable and in love. And you decided that he was beneath your friend.
Yeah.
And you had your other idea in mind of what you wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. So you manipulated a young girl who idolizes you.
Yeah.
Why would you misuse your power like that?
Yeah.
And I think Knightley is the only person who calls her out on that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I genuinely think that does a disservice. When other people don't call her out, that does a disservice to Emma. I think other people look at her and go, she had good intentions. Let's not tell her.
Yeah, no, for sure. 1,000%. There's so much about that scene, because I agree with when you're talking about how she manipulated Harriet, because she really did. And that mm-hmm. scene is like kind of hard for me to watch, because she's standing here saying out loud, she's like, I cannot sway you one way or the other. But her silence is like saying everything. Like, she is very intentionally mm-hmm. manipulating and moving her towards a choice while claiming that she would never do that to her. And so that's mm-hmm. such a weird scene, because that also feels kind of malicious to me. But then also the scene later when Knightley is confronting Emma about this and they're having this fight. It is interesting because Emma also defends Harriet in that moment when he says, like, she's like, this is a simple girl who maybe is kind of pretty, but otherwise she has zero prospects and she'd be lucky to have this one guy and that chance will never come again. And she comes back and she's like, no, Harriet's more than that. Like, she has other stuff and I think she could be great. But then the question is she talking about who Harriet actually is or who she wants mm-hmm. to create Harriet to be? So, because then later, once she and Knightley are having a sweet moment and he's saved Harriet at the dance from being a wallflower, he then says to her, mm-hmm. he's like, you were right. She's a really sweet lady. And I was being mean before with what I said. So I don't know. There's so many layers to this.
Yeah. And I think that's what's so well, like, that's what's so well done in Austen in general. And also in this specifically is I really love that conversation that they have because, yes, Knightley is pointing out a missing piece of Emma's understanding because Emma's under the impression that this is like a particularly good thing for her to be doing for someone and is actually acting pretty selfishly. And she doesn't understand the risk that she's putting her friend in, mm-hmm. but Knightley also doesn't understand what it is to be a woman.
Yeah.
Like Emma is not wrong in her statement kind of back to him of you think a pretty girl's not enough? Like, you think her being pretty is not enough to get her somebody above her station? Like, that's absolutely enough. Until women are wanted for their wit and their intelligence and all these other things. And it's sort of a commentary on her own frustration in her own life, yeah. which is so, like, she's projecting on other people. Oh, like, she keeps setting everyone up because she can't possibly marry anyone mm-hmm. because she would never leave her father. Yeah. And so that's part of why she has to put all of her energies in this. Like, other young women would be off getting married so they could rent a house, so they could have something to do, mm-hmm. where Emma isn't going to ever do that mm-hmm. in her mind.
Yeah.
So I think that it's such an interesting conversation, and all of Emma and Knightley's conversations are so layered and good like that.
Yeah.
Like, because I think their makeup, and I think this happens between that initial fight and the moment at the ball, but their initial makeup about that fight is Emma saying, let's be friends again. Both of our, like, at a minimum, we both were coming from places that were good. Because she's mad at him because she thinks if she really believed that these two people were in love and would be happy forever, if she had, like, understood that, mm-hmm. I don't think she would have done what she did. She thought there was a better opportunity for her friend. And she did shitty manipulative things about it. And she was wrong. And she shouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
But I think in her mind, if we tell a different story where she's right and he's wrong, which was equally possible, he tried to encourage somebody to settle, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's what she's arguing.
And that's, again, yeah, it's the layers of this. And, like, they're both mm-hmm. a little wrong and they're both a little right. So mm-hmm. it is really interesting. But I guess at the time, unfortunately, the reason why Emma's like, no, not a farmer. What about this very awkward Frankenstein priest? Ooh. Wouldn't you like to marry him?
They do such a good job of making him truly terrible, which I didn't mention him when we were talking about the cast earlier, but he is you don't watch The Crown, so you wouldn't know. He plays Prince Charles in not the most recent season, but in the two seasons prior to that, kind of like young adult Charles.
Okay.
And he does a really good job of being a truly terrible person.
Oh my gosh. His performance in this is so bizarre because, like, I don't know, it's very theatrical. I refer to him as a Frankenstein in my notes because there's something about, like, the way his collar and boxy, like, shoulders, and he kind of moves around in this weird way. So he's odd in general, but then he is over while Emma is, like, first spending time with her governess, and she gets it in her head that he might be into Harriet. And then later when mm-hmm. he's over again, because he just kind of hovers around all the time mm-hmm. and she's they're looking at the artwork and everything. Then when she's like, oh, I will, like, paint a likeness of Harriet to show this guy, like, how pretty my friend is. And he is mm-hmm. obviously drooling over Emma. And she's like, he's so in love with you, Harriet. And she's like, is he? It's like, no, you morons.
Well, it is that classic thing of, like, it's obvious from the full outside of it, right? Like, it's especially since we know what's happened. Like, I know what's going to happen. I don't know. I probably would have picked up on it if I didn't. But, like, it is confused. Like, the whole intention is that they have these big feelings that they only can express through subtext instead of text. They can't be like, I like you, and so I want your art framed in this overly elaborate frame. But he's like trying, like, it is one of those things where Emma just doesn't even think about the idea that he would like her. Mm-hmm. Like, she's like, I would never. So obviously he knows that. Yeah. And they're all just in this, like, very much to do about nothing, confusing, like, space. And I think it's funny because the other thing that I was thinking of when we were talking about this is, I can't even remember, it might have been our friend Grace. We were having some conversation recently, and she mentioned that when you have a crush on someone, you're more likely to believe they have a crush on you. Like, when you are attracted to someone, you're more likely to believe that they're attracted to you. And so he, because Emma is clearly not into him, and he thinks she is. And Harriet is, like, clearly into Priestman, and Priestman clear. I mean, like, she's into it because Emma's encouraging it, right? Yeah. But, like, so everybody is a little bit blind to the person in this triangle that they are infatuated with because they're projecting their own reality on the situation. Like, Emma's the one manipulating the situation, but everyone is deluding themselves in that situation.
Yeah. And I think, I'll just touch on this briefly now, but I think one of my, like, kind of big, like, takeaways, if I were writing an essay about this, is just the idea that Emma is someone who believes she understands everything about everyone and knows exactly how the world works. And then the rug gets pulled out from under her feet and she realizes, whoops, actually, I don't know anything. So, yeah. And we see that in this scene for sure. My note here. Okay. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens, but there's, like, this Christmas dinner, which we're going to come back to because I need to freaking talk about her brother-in-law. Oh my God, do I love him. But then
I love him so much.
So good. But so anyway, something happens where, well, you know, it's going to snow. And so the dad's like, oh, I'll catch my death of cold. And they all evacuate the party to get him home, and they take the carriages. And then Emma is left having,
because Priestman says the word snow, and it's like a code. It's like a code phrase that means action, go, go, go. Because that's how his wife died.
Yeah, exactly.
His wife died when it was snowing.
Oh, it's so sad. So Emma finds herself having to ride in a carriage with uncomfortable Frankenstein priest, in which case there's a bump in the road. He falls on her and he's like, well, now's as good a time as any to propose. And she's like, what the fuck are you doing? And it's this whole thing. And he has this line where it's something along the lines of, he says, he's like, oh, your long silence confesses that you feel the same. And I'm like, okay, what is up with Frankenstein priest, St. John, and Mr. Collins? They all need to form, like, an obsessed holy boy, like, incel club.
They have their incels. They're on the internet. They all have a podcast.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. The podcast that they would have. Oh, it'd be so bad. Boys with mics.
Very bad. Very bad. So anyway, so I just had to comment on the fact that he is in a secret online club with those other two mopey.
So terrible. Guys. The thing that I wrote down from that, because he goes from, like, a Mr. Collins doesn't really know what he's doing, really, really awkward in these social situations, like, please, I'm begging you to stop. And I think all three of those men that you listed have a similar turn at some point too, which is they go from, like, oh, you're being bashful, to, like, I'm mad that you're not giving me what I feel I deserve. Yeah. And because of that, I'm going to take that out on you. And they have moments that we've talked about before, because sometimes Rochesters and adaptions will ride this line of, like, you're crossing a line too scary and dangerous. And that moment when he bangs on the wall and yells, driver, stop the carriage. I literally wrote down, if anyone ever does that, you get away from them as quickly as possible. Like, that is not someone you want to be alone with. Yeah. That is scary.
Which, thank goodness, he's the one who gets out and then walks home in the snow. Because otherwise, Emma would have to be the one to be like, I need to get out of here. Like, please let me out. I don't want to ride with this guy anymore.
Yeah.
But so anyway, her brother-in-law, who I absolutely love, it's so similar to when we were talking about Sense and Sensibility and that couple shows up and the carriage opens and the dogs run out. And like the introduction to this family is amazing because you see a carriage and you just hear crying, like shouting children, an angry wife. And she's like, oh, you're spilling and all this shit. And the carriage opens, they come out and you see this poor dad slash husband. And he's just like, oh my God, I was in the carriage with this mess for however many hours on the road. And it's clear that he like clearly loves his family, but it's just so tired because like his wife is like freaking out about everything, and there are just so many great lines with him that I just love.
It's so good. He's so clearly like, because you're right, there are, it's one of the things I love about movies like this where like there's subtle moments where he looks like he's just like desperately miserable. It reminds me again, Sense and Sensibility, that other couple where that woman is constantly just like making, like saying things and her husband is just like,
Hugh Laurie's character,
begging you to stop. Hugh Laurie's like, please, I'm begging you to stop.
He's like, I love you so much, but can you not right now?
Please, please stop. So like, it's a very similar vibe to that. Except you can tell in certain moments that they really love each other.
Yeah.
And it's sort of this idea of like, she clearly has anxiety. I mean, she has the same like hypochondria anxiety that her father does. Mm-hmm. And she having kids has like amplified that a million times because the baby burps and she freaks the fuck out.
And she's like, call the doctor. And she's like, we don't need a doctor. She's like, get him over here right now. And this whole thing. I wish I could remember exactly what one of the lines is, but there's like,
I have two of the lines written down that she says to him.
Okay, because there's one that he says where like somebody, like a big kerfuffle happens and they all run off and he's like left alone with like Emma and Knightley or something. And he's like, oh my God, someone's like, it's the Black Plague or something. And he's like, it's not the Black Plague. And he's just like, why are they so afraid and upset about everything?
He's like, I'm gonna have to die. I'm gonna get die. But the things that she says to him, and I wrote these down specifically like as a gift to you, because you're getting married and you're gonna need to say things to Sam at certain points. And so these are some like hot tips that I got from their marriage for you to take into your marriage.
Thanks.
So one that I really loved is, husband, comport yourself.
I'm ready for that one.
It's like, Sam feels like he needs that sometimes.
Yeah.
And then the other one, which it's really about, like, it's not a unique line so much as it's like about the tone that she delivers it in. So it's after the father says the word snow, like somebody just said, there's a live bomb in this room. And the father and the older daughter look at each other and they panic and send the whole room into panic. And the brother-in-law is like, could we maybe like stop screaming about the fact that it's lightly snowing? And she responds to his being like, please calm down, with, husband, please.
it's so good. So I loved seeing them. They're some of my favorites. I think the whole what even is Emma's family's last name, can you think of it off the top of your head?
I have it in my notes.
Nice. Because that whole brood of people, I think it's one of the cutest scenes. And this is kind of just jumping a bit to the end.
I don't have it in my notes.
If that's okay. Because I want to see this now before I forget. Because we know that she and Knightley end up together. You're not worried about those spoilers, people. We're here for it. But I think it's one of the cutest things ever of like showing how he is perfect for their family. Not only because he witnesses these crazy things happening all the time and still sticks around and loves them. But in that very end scene, you know, they're... after Bill Nye does the cutest shit in the world, setting up those screens for them so they can have their privacy while still being chaperoned. And then he like actually gets nervous about cold stuff and like leaves. The fact that she and him just kind of sit there and look at each other and do a little laugh to be like, this family, and almost like silently to say, she's like, you want to be part of this? And he's like, hell yeah, I'm here for it. So it's like so cute.
It's very similar to the brother-in-law at Emma's wedding is crying.
Yeah.
It's so, that's the moment that I'm like, oh, you love your family.
Yeah.
Because he's like, that's me at weddings. Like, I'm going to try to not do that so blubbery at yours, but like, that is me at weddings.
Awesome.
I'm just like up there crying because I love so much.
Yay. I love it.
But yeah, I think let's talk about, what is his name? Frank Churchill. Mm-hmm. And then when we can talk about some of the drama there, and then let's just talk about Knightley for the rest of the episode.
Sure.
So who is Frank Churchill?
So Churchill is the mysterious son of her governess's new husband. And he is someone, I think my one thing that I wrote down. So he is someone who is frequently discussed before we ever see him. And Jane Fairfax gets the same treatment. And it's so interesting because, spoiler alert, it turns out these two mysterious like strangers turn out to be engaged in the end, but
which is a classic Austen twist.
Yes. So, but it's so interesting because like, I think Emma idolizes this guy that she's never met. She's putting him on this pedestal and Knightley is always like being like, why do you think this guy is like, why do you think Sun like comes out of his butt? My butt was the one on screen.
My butt was on screen. You've never even seen his butt.
You've never seen his butt. And she's like, that's right. That's why it must be perfect. Cause I can envision it just how I want it to be. So I think she just idolizes this guy. And I also wonder if her kind of like, you know, making him out to be this like perfect possible romantic partner, because I feel like that's almost kind of how she shapes Harriet to be her best friend. I think in her mind, she's like, oh, like, I bet if I had a love interest, he'd probably be the perfect one. So, which is all about how she loves to control things and all kinds of stuff like that. But I think part of it is that he, because her governess, who I think she's sad that her governess has left her, who's kind of a mother figure, this is now like, if she like somehow married this guy, they would be family again. I don't know. I think that's part of it about why she.
I think that's like the main. I think it's one of those things where it feels very like middle school crushy, where you're like, I saw a guy and he was cute, and I've been reading a lot of romance books, and he kind of looks like the main character from my romance books, so I'm gonna get like crazy about it. It's similar to the like you pick your guy in One Direction and you love him forever, right? Like it's Hugh Jackman. You know how classically all little girls are really into Hugh Jackman?
I mean, this one was, so what can you do?
I still think of you every single time I see him do anything.
Amazing. But yeah, so there's all this talk about him, and then eventually he does come and they're pretty flirty and she's all excited about it. And he makes a lot of mysterious remarks about Jane, which was odd to me. I have to go back and rewatch that scene to see about how he talked about her. Because it almost seemed as if he and Emma were like kind of gossiping and almost being mean, like saying mean things about Jane. And I'm like, so, why are you fake teasing your fiance? Like, is this just like a weird game for you?
Kind of the vibe I got. First of all, he's sort of shitty.
Yeah.
And sort of because the moment that he starts teasing her is when the mysterious pianoforte shows up at the house for Jane to have. And it's very like, oh, who sent this? And some people think it was Mr. Knightley because he totally would because he's such a sweet bean and so rich. And Emma kind of picks up on the fact that it might be Frank. Like she walks over to him and is like, what was that about?
Yeah.
And so I think Emma is savvy enough where if somebody was going to pick up on it, Emma would pick up on it. And so I think that's his way of being like, I don't want to get caught. And so I'm going to play into the cattiness that I know this woman is capable of. And that's like, I think we've all known people in our lives where like they could end up with a Frank Churchill or they could end up with a Mr. Knightley. One of them makes them significantly better. The other one drags them down into the mud.
Yeah.
And I think that that's Emma's choice here.
Well, they have,
and Frank sucks.
Yeah. Well, they have a remark about that during the proposal scene when Knightley is talking to her and all this other stuff. And they were talking about all these different aspects that like go into, you know, whatever her answer will be and their feelings and all this stuff. But to find out, that Jane is engaged to this guy and I guess they go through with it. They both have that remark where they're like, God, that poor lady, she now is going to marry this dude who's kind of a jerk. Like,
yeah.
So I also, but Jane seems like such a sweet person, apart from being, you know, just kind of competitive with Emma. I don't know. It seems odd to me that she would actually marry that guy. But
yeah, I think it's, I kind of get the impression that like they don't play up that plot line in this adaption as much as I've seen it in other ones. Because the other thing too that they sort of allude to in this, but I've seen a little bit more clearly in some of the other things that I've seen, I've never read Emma, is there's this allusion to the idea that Knightley might have given her that pianoforte and he might be interested in her. And so there's, I kind of get the impression that like she was all like, she's also manipulating people. She's also telling this other narrative, and they're behaving poorly to hide this information so he can inherit.
Okay.
Like, they're both sort of behaving poorly, knowing that it's for this payout later of they want to get married.
Interesting.
But yeah, I think in certainly the way that these two characters in this adaption, he seems to suck and she seems great.
Yeah.
Although she does one up Emma in the best way when it comes to the piano. It was so good.
Yeah, no, her line was amazing when she's like, oh, it's so sad that you didn't bring any sheet music. And she's like, oh, I do hope I remember the notes. Crack. Just like goes into this insane thing.
So insane. Piper knocked over her mic.
Yeah, which now some people get to see in person. But
yeah, that's the advantage of the Patreon, baby.
Oh my God.
You get those hot mics getting knocked over.
It's amazing.
But yeah, I think in general, that leads to my, it's one of those scenes that, like, it's so deeply human. It's so well done. It shatters my heart into a million pieces. Mm-hmm. Which is when Emma makes that remark about Miss Bates.
Yeah.
And they're playing a game, and she just, like, she's doing the witty banter thing, and she's been, like, so in that mood that she forgets how kind of powerful she is, mm-hmm. as Knightley points out, and how much those words can really hurt if you're not careful.
Yeah. And again, Austin is a master when it comes to the levels of meaning that go into these moments. Mm-hmm. But because it's like, it's, Emma is at fault for this, but there's also mm-hmm. to take into account the fact that Mr. Churchill is, like, setting her up, and he keeps playing, like, pushing for mm-hmm. this, like, weird game that she's like, I don't know if I actually want to do this, whatever, sure, let's go with it. And so, but then when she, you know, makes the hurtful remark, which is the idea you can share, like, one really interesting thing, you can share two, like, slightly uninteresting things, or three totally boring things. And Miss Bates, I think, in a great show of, like, awareness and humility, like, puts herself mm-hmm. out there being like, oh, well, I can easily say three annoying things. Hee hee hee. And it's like, and then Emma has to fly in and just be like, yeah, because you do that all the time and we always hate everything that you say. In essentially, that's my adaptation.
Yeah, she says, that's Piper's adaptation of Emma. But she says, I believe the line is something along the lines of, like, but you've never stopped at three.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the trouble is you've never stopped at three. And it's one of those things where when you're playing the, like, who can say the wittiest thing game mm-hmm. and you start to get meaner and meaner, it's the mean girls in middle school. Like, it's the, like, in order to make myself feel good, I'm going to say the witty, smart thing. So she's, like, trying to impress this guy mm-hmm. and forgets about what matters, which is you don't bully someone who's sweet,
yeah.
like, and who idolizes, like, all these people idolize her. And she's, and Knightley's speech afterwards is, like, so good, especially since this is after the ball, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So it's like, it's such a great moment because he knows he has feelings for her mm-hmm. and he's aware of that. And you can see him battle with himself of, like, I don't want to, like, lecture her right now, but I also am, like, so mad at her. And I want to tell her about that she had this effect on people mm-hmm. and that she shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And call her out on that fact.
Yeah.
And it's really well done.
Well, it's what makes him a perfect partner for her. Mm-hmm. But then before we move on from this, I feel like we've all felt like both, at least I have felt like both Emma in that situation and mm-hmm. I felt like Mrs. Bates in that situation, because, like, you can be the person who has your feelings hurt, but then also, like, teasing doesn't come naturally to me. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up with, like, a lot of siblings around my own age. Like, my sister's 10 years older than me. So the mean, playful banter thing doesn't come natural. So anytime I do engage in that, I always worry that I, like, accidentally take something too far because my feelings are easily hurt. And I'm like, oh no, I don't want to actually, like, either say something that I didn't mean to be mean or have something slip or whatever. I don't know. But then what's so interesting about that scene is as soon as she does something, like, vicious and mean, that everyone is mm-hmm. like, whoa, like, if anybody said this in our social society, that would be a huge taboo. But it's instantly followed up with that one guy being like, oh, how do you spell perfection with two words, M, E and M or whatever? And it's just like someone is instantly right there to be like, oh, but you're so perfect and nice that this was only a joke, right? And it's like they're trying to kind of almost give her an out to be like, oh, you don't have to feel bad, little Miss Perfect. Like, you probably didn't mean anything by it. And so I feel like that's kind of how her whole life has been. And that's how she's kind of gotten to this point, is because everyone has always, if she did anything wrong or anything malicious, someone's like, oh, but you didn't know any better. Like, you're perfect little Emma. So we're not going to correct you. But then in comes the guy who is meant to be with her, who's like, no, don't talk like this. Like, I'm going to correct you because you're better than this and you should know how hurtful you are. And it's this, such an interesting, like, I don't know, dichotomy of things. So,
because I think it's so important in those situations. I think I completely agree. I think we've all been Emma in that situation and we've all been Miss Bates. And I think there's this extra layer in this particular situation of the power dynamic between these people. Just socially, if nothing else. But I think that what I really enjoy about that moment and the way that you're talking about that is the second Emma starts by saying it to get the next witty remark out. And this person who we've watched annoy her and annoy her and annoy her, she just like stamps. And it's brutal. But the second she watches Miss Bates feel bad and question it and worry, she feels bad too. Yeah. And I think that's an instance of something, just to totally comment on something completely unrelated. I think that that's like I said, that feels really middle school to me. That feels really high school to me. Like, that's like the only way you learn where that line is by crossing it and then apologizing later. Yeah. And that's the danger of things like social media, because if you don't see how those words hurt someone, and you don't see that, like, they, like, you don't have that person to person realization of, like, they hurt me, but then I can see that they really regret that. Like, they didn't, like, and give them an opportunity to apologize or whatever it is. You just get meaner and meaner until kids are saying terrible things to each other online.
Until they grow into adults who say terrible things to each other online. Yeah.
Or in person, because they don't ever learn to care that it hurt someone else's feelings.
Yeah. That's a very insightful connection, Lillian.
You're welcome. And that is why we are starting a campaign against online bullying.
Be like Emma at the end of this movie and don't bully.
Yeah.
Don't be like Emma at the beginning of this movie.
Bring somebody a basket.
Yeah.
It's going to make everything better if you bring them a basket and you say, I'm so sorry.
Which, again, she didn't apologize in that scene. She hands her a basket. She didn't say, I'm sorry for that mean thing I said. Like, most of that scene is Mrs. Bates just being like, oh, like, I'm sorry I didn't come to the door fast enough. I shouldn't have kept you waiting, lady who was mean to me. Also, you're so pretty and so nice and you brought me a basket and wow, you're so great. And it's just like, please stop groveling. Like, you should kind of be a bit more strong and let her say I'm sorry.
I think what I like about that scene, because I don't disagree that, like, I would want an apology. But I think what I like about that scene is it's the subtlety of the unspoken social stuff. So her showing, like, with her social status, her showing up at this woman's apartment, where we really for the first time get to see the difference in the way Emma lives and the way Miss Bates lives. And this, and Miss Bates apologizing for all of those things, that's her being nervous and ashamed of the fact that they don't have someone to go get the door.
That's a good point.
Like, that's what everyone else would have. Like, it's about her essentially apologizing for her poverty. And where she's fought, like, and her social status. And Emma not saying anything, because she can't say, like, oh, it's not a big deal. Like, that's not, you can't diminish somebody's apology for it. But, like, Emma not saying anything and handing over a basket that is clearly an apology and not, because if she brings back up the thing she said, then she's acknowledging that it was meant to be hurtful and, like, acknowledging what that subtext was. Where if she just kind of shows up, gives a basket, like, goes to this person's house and acknowledges a friendship there, that is a different kind of more subtle apology.
That's very insightful, Lillian. There are different kinds of languages, not just what we say. So
Let's talk about the ball and let's talk about Knightley.
Okay. And then we got to wrap it up because it's late and we're over an hour already. My first note is I love whenever there's a ball like this in a movie. And every time I see it, I'm like, I wish we could have a ball. And I said this during our Pride and Prejudice episode too. But I'm like, oh, does that look fun? And once again, I noticed this is definitely a thing from like these way long time ago when they would have these parties. They would start at like 9 o'clock at night and they ended when the sun came up, and I'm like, dude, they knew how to party. And
come on, Piper, let's go till the sun comes up.
I can't do that anymore, Lillian. I'm not cool like the silver haired man who married a governess and is the one who's like, come on, you slow pokes, another dance, let's keep going. I'm not as cool as him, I guess.
Yeah,
I'm tiring.
That's what I've always said about you.
Not as cool as an old man who likes to dance. Yeah, it's on my business card.
I've never been as cool as anyone who likes to dance.
But they do a dance. Knightley gets to show how much of a knight in shining armor he is when Harriet doesn't have a partner right away and she's snubbed by the very awful Frankenstein.
Who has a terrible wife that he terribly earned.
Yes, who looks like a fun little bird. And so when he snubs her and she sits down and one sad girl tear falls down her cheek, then the hottest guy at the party comes up to her and asks her to dance. And so they do, and it's great, and he saves the day. And then he and Emma have a cute little chat, and then he and Emma dance. And ooh boy, talking about languages that don't need words. They fall in love and they say so much to each other in that scene, and not a word is spoken. So oofta.
It's so well done, and it's such incredible acting to watch these two go from this like conversation to kind of realizing, like the moment where Emma watches him rescue Harriet and she's like, oh my god, that's so sweet. But it's also like, so Knightley, like Knightley would absolutely do that, which Knightley, get it. and she's just like, they're talking later and she's like kind of adoring him, and then they're dancing and they're both sort of realizing like, hey, there's something spicy here. And then my favorite thing happens after the ball, Piper. What happens after the ball?
So they say goodbye and she gets in her carriage. And as soon as the carriage runs off, he's like, hang on, I have a question. And he runs after the carriage and he chases her, wee, 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 all the way home. And
we watch him fully sprint. This actor did such a good job at the full sprint.
Yes.
I was exhausted watching him.
Well, he just like spent an entire night dancing, and now he's running after a carriage in his cravat and shirt and vest and jacket and all of these old-timey layers. And Emma gets home and sits very prettily up in her window to gaze outside, and oh look, there's the boy I like, and he's down below in the garden. And she goes down and he's about to say something, but guess what? Lillian, don't you just hate it when your love interest is about to propose and then your friend gets attacked by bandits on the highway and ruins everything?
Piper, could you please stop getting attacked by what this movie boldly calls gypsies over and over again?
Yep.
If you could stop getting attacked by people on your way home from balls so that I could just one time have a romantic proposal, because that is the only thing that has been holding me back.
You know, Lane, I just keep getting this proposal, like, I have like a spidey sense about it, and I'm like, oops, gotta go get into trouble.
Where I didn't interrupt your engagement by getting into trouble.
It's very kind. I think it was mostly because you were in Red Wing and you couldn't get here fast enough.
I was not in Red Wing. I did not live in Red Wing. You guys have been engaged my entire life, and so I lived in Eden Prairie at the time.
Well, audience, just a tip for everybody. If you're planning on intentionally getting attacked by bandits so that you can interrupt your friend's proposal, just make sure you have some scissors on you so that you can fight them off, as Harriet so wildly
did. That's the key. Harriet does a terrible job of telling that story, and it's so good.
Because, yeah, I believe that's what she says, right? That she stabbed them with scissors, and that's how she got away.
She says, thank goodness for the scissors. It was the scissors. And she's sort of like out of it a little bit. And then Emma has the greatest moment with those two goofballs where she's like, wait. And they both come back. And then she says, Mr. Churchill needs to stay. And Knightley looks like devastated because he doesn't realize that Emma's trying to do it for Harriet, and Harriet thinks Emma's doing it for Emma. It's like classic. Everyone's confused.
Everyone's so confused.
My next favorite scene, it's so like Knightley realizing he's in love and sort of being devastated and unsure about that is so good, because he goes back to his house, fully lays on the floor in the middle of a room where all the furniture is covered in sheets. His footman comes in, sees him on the floor, turns around and leaves.
It's very good. Oh, I love it. We've also all been a floor troll at some point, so relatable.
I mostly dramatically flopped down on my bed and then wrote in my diary, Piper.
Nice. Well, that's only because you didn't have a big portrait gallery full of cloth-covered objects of value.
I for sure, if I had a probably multi-million dollar rug in a portrait gallery, I would have laid on that.
Yeah, for sure. Want to talk real quick, shout out to the cinematography in all of this movie, but it really struck mm-hmm. me when they're getting a tour of Knightley's fancy house and all of these scenes of it's Emma in the foreground and behind her is just these paintings, which take up the entire mm-hmm. background. You can't see anything but the painting and then her, which again is totally intentional. Always this yeah. metaphor of she's perfection. Look at her. She's like mm-hmm. in with these like figures in this classic art. And so that amazing. The fashion, unbelievable.
The fashion is so good. I'm going to post some pictures on Instagram of it. I started taking notes for Bonnet Watch and it turned into all I was doing. Yeah. Emma has 1,000 amazing bonnets in this. Mm-hmm. It's so, so good.
My favorite one is the black and white one with the big black ostrich feather. That was my favorite nice. Of hers. I think this movie for sure was nominated for best costume design the year it came out, but I don't remember if it won. It might have, though, because these costumes were elaborate as hell, and they definitely took a long time to make.
The other thing that I want to mention before, I think our grand finale will be talking about the proposal scene, which is there was so many references to these different, like, screens that came up, and something that I will absolutely be putting on our Instagram is the scene where her dad is sitting in the room and they're just walking, like he's just essentially a prop. They're just walking through this room and he is surrounded by 5 separate screens. And he's just sitting in the chair reading a paper surrounded by screens, and it's perfection.
It's so good. So there, I guess, I feel like proposal part one takes place under the tree after like everything has like fallen apart in Emma's understanding of how like she thought she knew the people and how the world worked.
We have to talk about proposal part one.
Yeah. So proposal in depth. Yes. Okay. So what happens like right before that? Because that's when she, in that moment,
it's right after they found out about the the secret engagement between those two folks, and so she is upset, and she also just found out that Harriet likes Mr. Knightley.
Right.
So she's like got all this new information. We're seeing her start to acknowledge that she likes Mr. Knightley, mm-hmm. and she's wandering around, and she thinks that Knightley is going to be upset about Jane, and Knightley thinks she's going to be upset about Frank, and it's this whole confusing misunderstanding moment. To finish the Academy Awards, it was nominated for Best Costume and Best Makeup, and it did not win either.
Too bad. Robbery. But yeah, so this, you know, in a classic kind of period drama, we're sort of shouting at each other, and then we can't help it. Our passions are high. Our, like, an admittance of love is given. He says these things first, and it's very sweet the way he talks about it. And I love so much, you know, I love a vulnerable guy. And mm-hmm. so when he like first kind of talks about this and she like doesn't do a kind of response that he likes, he walks away under the tree because he's going to go cry. He starts crying and he's like, I can't cry in front of you. And then she goes after him and we see that he's actively crying because he loves her so much. And it's so cute.
And then he says my favorite line.
Tell us.
I love this line so much, which is, if I loved you less, maybe I could talk about it more.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
And it's so good.
It's so good that it gives Emma a nosebleed.
Immediately starts to bleed. And this is the thing. So first of all, one of the people who voted for the palette cleansers, they commented on Instagram. They explicitly put the emojis for nose and a drop of blood because they wanted us to talk about this.
Oh, Dude, that's so incredible. Okay, so my first thought when I see a character have a nosebleed for a big reaction is I'm like, what is this? An anime? Because it's like a classic trope in anime and manga that like if a character likes someone, it's I think honestly in more kind of like an adult reference, it's almost supposed to talk about how like, oh, I'm super turned on. Like, so blood would go to another part of your body to like get you excited. So if you're a girl and you can't get erect that way, you just go and blood shoots out of your nose to be like, oh my God, I'm so turned on right now. So that's a classic manga anime trope for all of our non-weeb listeners out there. But then the other thing I think about it, apart from it just supposed to be like a thing that is so unexpected to kind of add a bit of like odd humor into this very intense moment, is I feel like Emma, as we've seen, is someone who like tries to control everything in her life. And here's a moment where she's faced with like, she's like, I can't tamper my emotions, so I guess I'm bleeding. Like, it's so insane.
It's so good in this turn of a moment because it's so unexpected for people who know period dramas really well, because you expect that to be the crescendo, right? Like it's he's confessed his love. This is the proposal, the under the tree, they're going to kiss now and get engaged and all this stuff. And she gets that nosebleed, which by the way, apparently in a recent interview about Queen's Gambit, the actress was asked about that. And she said it was, quote, a skill she didn't know knew she had. So that is a thing she can get a nosebleed on command.
Yikes.
She did that for the movie.
Creepy.
And it was in the script.
Oh no, that's so creepy. What a weird skill. Yikes. Okay, good for you.
So that's incredible.
Amazing.
But then she ends up, her response is so funny. Like, it's such a good scene because he's confessed love. We know they love each other. And she immediately starts yelling, I can't do this again to Harriet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because that's the point where I feel like, okay, now I know for certain it's not a fake thing anymore. She absolutely loves and cares for this friend of hers to be like, no, like, I will put down my own chance at happiness if it means hurting my friend who I think maybe now likes you. So, very sweet. And I love, go ahead. I was going to say, it's very much kind of like a Darcy moment too, where he's like, oh, I'm going to fix everything. Don't worry about it. I'm going to go find that farmer. He's 1000% still in love with Harriet. I'm going to get him to propose. He's going to say yes. And then all our friends will be matched up and then we'll be available and we can be together. Hooray. So it's very cute.
So yeah, they come up with this plan. She goes and apologizes and all this stuff. But I love that she is like, so mad the whole time. She storms off to go do the right thing. She's like, I have to do this. And she like storms off to go be a better person. And he does at the very end this little like victory dance shimmy thing.
Cute.
That's so cute. Because he's like, oh my God. Like he realizes after she starts yelling about Harriet that like, that's the only reason she's not marrying you right now. And he knows it's going to get fixed.
Yeah.
Like, so he's fine and he's excited about it.
Ugh, and then
proposal part two.
And then they're hanging out with her dad. And he's a really good wingman, even though anytime someone gets married in this movie, he's like, poor so-and-so. Please don't leave me daughter, et cetera, et cetera. And yet he can see that these two people love each other. And so he does a very nice, gallant thing. And he's like, do you feel a draft? And Knightley's like, I don't think so. And he looks at him. He's like, come on, guy. I'm trying to give you a bone here. And he's like, oh, yeah, yes, I feel a draft. And he's like, servants. Which, by the way, those two servants are like some of the best like
are so good.
Comedy characters in this movie. So they bring in, first they grab the little one. He's like, no, the big one. Get me the big one. And so they create this little privacy shield around Emma and Knightley so that they can have a cute moment together. And it's so good.
And they have this whispered conversation where she says, like, it's such an example of how she has the biggest heart, right? Like, she's just like, how could I ever leave him? And he's like, well, bring him with. And she's like, there's no way he's moving. Like, he's never going to leave this house. And he goes, fine, I'll live here. And she's like, you'll live here. You'll leave the Abbey. You'll live with these crazy people. Like, you'll live, that man lives here where you would live. Do you want to do that? Because you have seen the rest of my family. They come here sometimes. You're sure this is what you want? And he just keeps saying yes and looking at her like, I'm so in love with you.
It's so cute.
Ugh, it's very good.
There's also like cool equality and feminist stuff here too, of this guy being like, it's not a, oh, you have to come and manage my house for me and take my name. He's like, no, I'm gonna come to you, baby, like, you're worth it, I'm coming to you. And it's so great, and it's it's really, really cute and a beautiful way to end the movie.
Yeah And it's also just like, I'm sure he's had lots of women who wanted him for the Abbey, and the idea that, like, it's one of those perfect, like, true romance moments where they both are interested in each other for not the reason that they're normally wanted.
Yeah.
Like, she's normally wanted for being beautiful and being able to, like, masterfully manage social situations. And he's normally wanted for being, like, rich and, I guess, handsome. No offense to the actor.
I also thought he was average.
The fact that these two, it's like, they just really love each other and they're willing to compromise what externally their lives should be and their, what other people think their value is, to be able to have each other for these reasons. That it's my favorite way that people love each other, when somebody loves the things you love about you.
Yeah.
And I think these two, like, she really values being intelligent and being kind and all of these other things. And he sees that in her.
Yeah. I think one of his sexiest moments, this is like before any of the proposal stuff, but I think that they both have feelings for each other at this point, is he's like, they're all playing cards together with Birdwife of the Frankenstein pastor. And they're talking about the beautiful collection that he has in his great estate at the Abbey. And he's like, oh, I'll open up the estate if you guys want to see it. Like, I'll give you guys a tour. And Birdwife is like, oh, I'll plan everything for you and I'll make the invite list and do all this stuff. And he has this line partially to, like, be like, no, you're too meddling and I don't deal with that stuff. But he has this thing where he's like, only one woman will ever make, like, will decide the invitations for my household. And until I find that lady, then I will be in charge of this. And it's very sexy, in my opinion. And I was like, oh, damn, Knightley.
Yeah. It's like, you just, like, put that lady in her place.
Yeah, I love it. Ooh.
You don't put anybody else in their place?
Exactly. It's like, you can tell me what to do.
But here's how we know that I watch too many period dramas, because I wrote down, and I said the same thing with Harriet and Mr. What's-His-Face, but when Emma and Knightley kiss, I was like, well, now you have to get married. You can't just kiss. Are you kidding me? There's no ring on this finger. What are you doing?
It was also a very good kiss.
It was a very good
kiss. I think those actors did have good chemistry with one another. I think you can really tell when someone's doing a kiss and it feels as if they're like, oh, this is the 20th time we've done this and I don't even like this person that much. And this felt like a very good kiss. So well done.
This is one of those classic movies. I mean, we started by talking about the cast. Like, this cast is incredible. Mm-hmm. It's so well done. And the director also is interesting. Her name is Autumn de Wilde.
Mm-hmm. Say it once more with confidence, Lillian.
Autumn de Wilde.
Wow. And boy, is she wild.
There's an E at the end, and I don't know what we should do about that.
I think it's still wild.
She is a director. This was her first feature film, which is incredible because it's so well done. She was a photographer, which I think you see in a lot of cinematography that you mentioned. And also, I know this makes me sound biased, but I also think it's really true. Like, in movies, I see this with Jane Eyre a lot. And I think I see this with lots of Austen stuff as well. It's not that men can't direct these movies. It's that if a woman isn't involved in either the writing or the directing of a movie, those subtle feminine things are often missed because they don't seem important and they're actually the whole show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, agreed. She did great. Should we give this a rating?
She did do great. Oh my goodness, I forgot. I forgot again. You do yours first, I'll think.
Okay. So I loved the discussion of this movie. And this score does not mean that I didn't like it. I'm going to give this a 7.5. I think I'm going to do a 7.5 because I do think this movie is, like, it's amazing quality. Again, like, we've talked about the complexity of the layers of all this stuff. It's really pretty. I think why I'm not ranking it higher is because until we get to the end with a lot of the drama, it feels a little slow to me. There was a lot of the stuff where I was like, what's, can we move it along?
A lot of heavy lifting in some of those moments. Yeah. The music, I was noticing that. It does a lot of like, this is only interesting because you make me think it is.
Right. So just for pace and excitement and level of engagement, I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10. Oh,
I think that's...
And my ranking is a peach for butts.
I don't want to be this person who's always telling people to go to our Patreon, but to see you have to see Piper's face when she decided peach. It was perfect. Oh my
God. It was an epiphany moment.
It was so good.
Thank you.
I think I feel really similarly about this movie, if only because, like, I love Jane Austen. I love Jane Austen stuff. It's great stuff. This is not my favorite Austen, but it's not even, it's the, probably the third. If I was ranking the three Austen movies we've watched, I would probably rank it third. Yeah. But it's a lovely... Like, if you're looking for a little pick-me-up, something with a little extra humor, something that feels kind of cozy, it was so lovely to get to watch yesterday with my dog. I'm having not the best week, and it was really nice little pick-me-up. And it's fun and funny and all the stuff that makes you feel warm and fuzzy. And so I'm giving it 8 out of 10.
Nice.
Because I think it's a really good movie.
Yeah.
But I'm also not surprised it didn't win a lot of awards, but was nominated for a lot of them. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of that movie.
I feel like you could tailor that remark just now, Lillian, to be a very snarky Emma, like, backhanded compliment. To be like, oh, well, she's quite good, but she hasn't won any awards, has she? Not that we blame
her. She's nominated for a lot of awards, but she's never won any now, has she? But I'm going to rate it 8 out of 10 curls.
Nice.
Because I loved what you said about her kind of perfection, because it drove me absolutely nuts. I spent the whole movie being like, your curls are very little and they're very tight, and I just want to kind of like pull them and see what happens.
Amazing. Because I keep wanting to say Ana de Armas. It's not Ana de Armas. It's Anya Taylor-Joy.
No.
Anya Taylor-Joy looks like she was made in a lab. So she's the perfect person to play a perfect character. It's a little upsetting about how pretty and perfect she is. So I feel you. But yeah.
Well, we will go into more detail on this the next time that we talk, which will be next week. When we are going to be reviewing the 1938 Mercury Theater production of Jane Eyre. It's a radio production, and it's the first time Orson Welles played Rochester. He did multiple radio adaptions because he had some involvement with Mercury Theater. I think he owned it or managed it or something. I don't know. I'm going to look into it. Fun facts coming next week. But... the announcement that I teased at the beginning, I will give slight details of now, and then we'll go into more depth about what that looks like next week, which is we are going to be doing a trip.
Yeah.
We are going to get on a plane, and we are going to fly to a place, and that place is Arizona. And Piper, why are we flying to Arizona?
Because there is a theater there that's doing a production of Jane Eyre, and they invited us to come and see it.
Oh my God!
So we're going to
see Jane Eyre the musical.
Yay.
They're doing the Broadway production that we liked, which is why we're going. If they did the Utah one, we weren't going to go.
What's the freaking line from the beginning where it's like, burn hell, she's going to burn hell? We're not seeing that one.
No, we're seeing the good one.
Yay.
So we are going to have more details on that. We're going in April. It's Piper's birthday trip. And we'll have all the details of like where that is and how you can get tickets so that you can see us there, because that would be unbelievably fun.
So cool.
So eccentric of you guys, but so much fun.
If you're in Arizona, you can maybe come see Jane Eyre the musical with us.
And if you're not in Arizona and you just are rich and feel like chartering a plane and coming to see it with us, do that too.
Amazing.
But That's all the stuff we have before our normal stuff. If people have specific thoughts on the nosebleed, how can they tell us about that, Piper?
Well, you can send us an emoji of a nose and a little red drop. You can do that on all of our social networks. We are at Airbuds. You can also write us an email, airbuds@gmail.com.
Oh my God. Speaking of emails, did you see the email we got this week?
Not off the top of my head.
We got an email from one of our fabulous listeners. She's the same one who helped us with the ballet stuff. She sent us an email with some feedback on last week's episode that was really good. But also she included some pictures of a museum, like some fashion museum or like the Met or something, of these costumes on the most terrifying mannequins. Ooh. It's so spooky. Cool. We'll put them on our Instagram. But thank you, Paula, for that email. It filled me with joy, and it's about to fill Piper with joy, and then it's going to fill our audience with joy.
Hey, see, this is what makes you guys so amazing, because we're all just a sharing community. We've talked up our Patreon a whole bunch, and there's lots of reasons why you might want to do that. But if you care to join us in these video episodes, in getting tons of free fun content, then you can donate to our Patreon. There's a link to that on our website and on social and other places. But otherwise, you can also leave us a 5-star review. Tell us about a time when you had a bloody nose. And we'd love to hear all about that story.
If you guys rate us 5 stars and tell us about your bloody nose experience, I will tell a story about my bloody nose experiences. Ooh. They are interesting and tremendous.
Yeah, that's the content people come for. So if you want to be traumatized with us, I hope you'll join us next week. Until then, you guys, happy Jane Eyre reading and watching. Bye.
Bye.